Welcome to the Everyone's a Critic Movie Review Podcast. I'm your co-host, Bob Zarrell.
Hey, I met you. You are not cool.
With me, as always, is professional film critic, Sean Patrick.
I am too smart. S-M-R-T. I mean, S-M-A-R-R-T.
And Josh Adams.
Stick around.
Visit us at IHateCritics.net. We're also at EveryonesACriticPodcast.com, IHateCritics.com. And something with Libsyn. I also looked that one up, too. We're on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. Our handle there is CriticsPod. If you want to participate in our top fives, watch the trailers, read the reviews. Every now and then we'll post a news story to debate about. Or just interact with us. Go there and do that. We're on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and Spotify. No matter where you listen to us, please go to iTunes, subscribe, and rate and review the show. You'll read your review on the air. Since moving to Libsyn, we've fallen down the charts, so we need a review or something to move us back up. Part of it might have been our artwork. I don't know. They changed their requirements, but we'll be back. Just need a review to get us there.
Yeah.
Patreon. IHateCritics.net/Patreon. That's the best way to help support the podcast. You get a credit on the show. There's select merch that I haven't made since we've changed the name of the podcast, but I will eventually. And a bonus podcast that we need to think about recording here in the next couple weeks. Fishing with Gandhi is going to be the movie we talk about there, recommended to us by our special effects level, Corey. And then we'll play some more Flickchart. And I believe Jason from New Mexico has already gone out and watched it. So, and I think it's free on Amazon. I don't know. We'll get there. Hopefully in April. Should we start with news?
Yeah, why not?
Josh?
This is so exciting, everyone. Listen up. Okay. Back in...
Bob physically recoiled.
I'm used to it.
What are we on?
Back in 1984, a film called The Last Starfighter was released, and in 2014 on this very show, I got very excited about revisiting it, and you two summarily dismissed and/or thought that it was bad, and that's understandable because it's a film that does suffer from poor special effects and enthusiasm of the time, meaning... It's a little too giddy, even for me, although I like it. Starring Lance Guest, amongst others, it's kind of a cult classic for geeks, meaning it's not really a cult classic, but I really dig it. And I always thought to myself, we've talked about how films that don't quite stack up, those are the ones you want to remake. Those ones you want to reboot. They're good, but like, man, they could have been better if. And in this case, the screenwriter for Rogue One, A Star Wars Story, his name is Gary Whitta. He, along with Tony Gilroy, completed that Rogue One script, and he posted some concept art for a project that he's doing, which is a reboot of The Last Starfighter. And this is magnificent concept art coming from the world that I am from, which is the Ralph McQuarrie Star Wars world. Concept art is what those films are all about. That's what they came from, and it's very iconic. It's very linear in a way. You know, it's simple. It calls back to sci-fi of yore. And this particular artwork was The Last Starfighter in Ralph McQuarrie mode. And if it doesn't excite you as a science fiction fan, if you're at all like me, like nobody listening to this show is like me, but if I could draw a geek or two,
yeah.
Oh, well, hi. I'm so glad you're listening because
Josh doesn't know that most people tune in to hear him.
He doesn't read the messages, only you
right,
and I do.
I know.
What messages? No, in all seriousness, though, I'm excited about this because of all things that could be remade, this is something that I've actually thought would be great to remake, and Gary Whitta is trying to do that. Drumming up interest via concept art is the way to do it. I'm excited about it. I even messaged him trying to get him to, you know, drum up enough of a conversation with me so that we could get him on the show. You know, that would be a good get.
He responded with a middle finger emoji.
No, I'm waiting for it.
No, the thing about messaging on Facebook is if you're not friends, you don't always see it right away.
Of course.
You find it. So we'll see, hopefully.
And if you're famous, you probably really will never respond to somebody like myself. And that's
be
fine.
Surprise. We've done it on the phone.
I will be. He hasn't read it yet, though. Like, we'll see. I'm not checking every day.
Set up an alert on his phone. I was trying to get an argument going on Facebook, and it didn't bite too much. This had just come out after Ready Player One comes out, and I'm wondering, isn't it kind of close to a similar... I know it's a slightly different story in that in Last Starfighter, don't they recruit the best of the best to go and fight, and then this... Ready Player One, you just everybody fights to see who's the best kind of thing. Are you worried it would be too much like Ready Player One by the time they made it?
Oh, absolutely not. In my opinion, Ready Player One is kind of a love story for gaming and 1980s nostalgia. Last Starfighter is one of those 80s nostalgia pieces, if you really want to get down to it. And the idea of it's a recruitment, per se. It's not like who's the best at a video game. To try and see who would be the best space pilot in a very long-standing galactic war. I know the movie, of course. I've seen it probably a dozen times in my life, at least. But there's no way that I could tell you what the main characters' names are or what the alien races are about. I just remember being cool before I went outside and played as a youngster.
I know so little about this that I thought we were talking about Battlestar Galactica.
Well, shit. Come on, Gary. Write the damn script and get it made.
Well, my brother loves Last Starfighter, I don't like it because of that. He watched it all the time.
I remember this now, yeah.
What about, and I haven't seen any of the concept art, but what if they pick, like, Call of Duty and then they start recruiting people for that type of video game instead of Aliens? Is that a possibility based on the concept art, or was there not enough concept art?
I saw it as more romantic than Call of Duty. Ralph McQuarrie's art in general is very sci-fi romantic. It's not gruesome and mechanical like H.R. Giger.
I know nothing about video games either. I just know that that's a video game.
Yes. Like Galaga or something, you know, in the movie. So I don't think Call of Duty in this would... mix. I don't think Ready Player One in this mixes either. That's why I didn't take the bait. It wasn't a good argument.
You haven't really defeated it, though.
There's no reason to defeat something that doesn't exist. Here we go. Come on.
It's not an 80s nostalgia movie if they remake it. The original is. The remake won't be, so it's not. Now it's a modern day video game movie in space as opposed to in the internet.
You know what? I think I know what angle you're getting at now. You're saying if they made that now, they would have to pull it into what we're currently doing.
I don't know that they'd have to. I just figured they would.
Okay, because no one's an arcade star anymore. Someone's a basement all-star now. But I can imagine a scenario where, you know, the alien race sets up like a hacking program and they release this game online and whoever's the best at it. Uh-oh. Uh-oh.
He knows how
I'm
to.
I'm starting to make his point. Damn it. Stop. I'm done.
He's simultaneously making my point and making me not interested.
That may be the Josh's thing that has ever happened on this show.
That's amazing. And I didn't even know.
Cut my mic off.
All right. Cutting your mic off. Solo. The trailer came out. What'd you guys think?
Here's the thing I'm having with Solo. This has been my thing with it, I guess, for a little while, is that I keep staring at Alden Ehrenreich and waiting for him to turn into Harrison Ford, and it just doesn't happen. So I'm looking for Han Solo, and I know he's supposed to be Han Solo, but he still, and I know these are just trailers, and it'll probably change with the movie, but he still doesn't feel like Han Solo to me. And it's bothering me, and this trailer especially, I just kept looking for that Han Solo-ness. And it's not there, and I don't know if I'm going to like the movie because of that.
I think I understand exactly where you're coming from if you didn't geek out about it too much. I think this is Han Solo before getting his heart broken, before having something monumental happen to him. So he's a bit more light on his feet, so to speak. And you guys know that I wanted Alden Ehrenreich to play this role way before they even finalized it down to five actors. I mean, we had seen Hail Caesar, and I said he would be great. And in a magical twist of events, they cast him. I'm very excited about the film. We get to hear Lando talk, Donald Glover as Lando, and it's a great line. I mean, I'm digging this more and more. The only thing that holds me back is Ron Howard directing it. You know, we see Paul Bettany in the film, and the trailer tells us, or in the trailer, he tells us in the trailer that he's a gangster. It seems like he's the main villain that they're going to steal from in this movie. Paul Bettany didn't come on until Ron Howard took over. So that tells me a sizable amount of the script was altered, and that's what they were filming. Was an entirely different villain, perhaps. And that's slightly bothersome because you might not be able to weave that together as deftly.
Ron Howard will be able to weave. He knows what he's doing.
Yeah, he's a great carpenter.
He likes to tie everything up, make it nice and happy. And no, I don't know.
The dude was in Andy Griffith, for crying out loud. Of course he was.
And Happy Days.
Just to be fair to Ron Howard, he has made good movies.
Oh, yeah.
There are good movies. Frost Nixon is an exceptional movie. Apollo 13 is in many ways an exceptional movie.
It's all right.
Beautiful Mind's good.
But even that, kind of, they all just kind of are happy. I don't know. Not happy is not necessarily the word, but there's just no...
Gentle and pleasant?
Kind of. But like an own Ron Howard, like he owns his own version of Gentle and Pleasant.
Yeah, Opie version.
Right. And that's another thing is he really doesn't know how to go dark. He really doesn't. He doesn't know how to go to places that are a little bit outside his comfort zone. Like when he made that whale movie with Chris Hemsworth, that needed something more. And he was going for something a little bit more uplifting, but it needed to go a little bit dark and get a little scary, and it doesn't. You know, Rush has its moments where that movie needed to go. Not Rush. What's it called? The speed movie with Hemsworth too.
You got it.
Right? Oh, was it Rush? Rush. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. When he made that again, there was an element of darkness to both of those characters that needed to be explored, and he just didn't quite get there. He stayed with the racing. He stayed with the easiest part to present, and that's kind of where that's kind of just where his comfort zone is. And I don't know. I'm not saying that like dark. I mean. Not quite like they're all killers or something like that. But just,
challenging. Just something challenging.
Yeah. And can you even challenge the character of Han Solo in that way?
And possibly, though, maybe you need Ron Howard for a movie like that where it's just fun. I mean,
I think that's exactly what they're going for is fun, and you can take it seriously, more seriously than Lord and Miller were going to do with it.
Way too much time.
I shut up a lot of that. I mean, geez.
I did have a point I wanted to make. I don't want to talk about it anymore. I'll do it anyway. I've noticed that Sean's doing a good job of like knocking the bar down a lot lately with trailers. Because every time he does this, he ends up liking the movie. So I'm starting to think maybe he's doing it on purpose.
Who knows?
Night School. Kevin Hart. Tiffany Haddish, is that her name?
Yeah, this is I found this disappointing because I think Tiffany Haddish is so much funnier than Kevin Hart actually, yeah. And her playing to him just I don't know. Not that I don't like Kevin Hart. Kevin Hart's been funny in just about everything I've seen, but he's doing that thing where he's gonna be Kevin Hart every time, and that's cool for a couple movies. I'm gonna get sick of this. I'm gonna get sick of the same Kevin Hart in every movie eventually. I mean, I liked Central Intelligence. I liked Jumanji a lot, but again, we're getting a lot of the same stuff. And when will that run come to an end is a big question for me. When will I start to hate seeing the same Kevin Hart performance every time? And this could be that one, especially since Tiffany Haddish is going to lift up a bunch of it, but it's just going to be him doing that same Kevin Hart character again.
But what I think's gonna, I think she might be like a year away from being the Kevin Hart character, and then she's gonna be the one you get sick of in 4 or 5 years. But no, I agree. She's hilarious right now, and I'm just kind of figuring out who she is, and she's been around forever. But she had a lot of success with that What was that movie last year?
Girls Trip, should not have been as good as it is, but she makes it so much better.
It's the same director. Malcolm Lee is a director. I love the Best Man movies, so maybe this is something I can actually enjoy.
And he does tend to do that. He does tend to make iffy concepts, you know, very straightforward, mainstream, simple concepts into something a little bit more. He's done that just about every time out. So I can trust that, but again, the sameness of Kevin Hart, and he's just playing Kevin Hart again in this movie, obviously from this trailer.
George Clooney hasn't made a career doing that, though. He's kind of been George Clooney, just about, other than like Oh Brother, Where Art Thou. He's kind of been George Clooney every other movie. But he has his, you know, he stays within his comfort zone, and he does a good job. Kevin Hart is kind of more gimmicky, I guess. I shouldn't have even explained that. Josh just made a look, and I had to
just let it there. I thought about introducing the idea of Out of Sight George Clooney, but I'm like, oh, that's not too far off from Ocean's 11. So, yeah, you're right.
And then there was two A24 trailers. We'll start with How to Talk to Girls at Parties.
You know, I was a little bit iffy on this trailer. I wasn't sure what it was going for, but then I realized this is directed by John Cameron Mitchell, the director of Hedwig and the Angry Inch, and... trying to remember the movie he did with Nicole Kidman now, Rabbit, I can't remember now, but...
Rabbit Hole,
thank you. Incredible director, and he does great things just every time out. He's made incredible movies. He's daring, he's challenging, he's always interesting, and for that, I think this movie's going to be incredible, and I can't wait to see it.
He's very stylish, too.
Yeah.
This movie has a ton of style, or at least from the trailer.
It's quite a cast, and we brought Hedwig and the Angry Inch to this show. I can't remember in what capacity, actually. If it was a classic?
I don't think it's been a classic.
It was one of those things that was maybe part of a tournament, and that's why I watched it. But, boy, was that something else. I mean, it really took me by surprise how good it was, to the point where anything that the director did after that I would see. So A24 as well? All right.
Yeah, so it could come back if this gets a wide release. Hedwig and the Angry Inch. And then Under the Silver Lake.
Odd trailer. I wasn't sure what to make of it. The title is rather strangely poetic, but then the movie is something completely different. And it looks almost like a comedy? I don't know.
Yeah.
Some kind of weird comic thriller. Girl disappears. A guy continues just looking for her everywhere. He doesn't know where she went. One night he's at her apartment. The next day he goes there and she's completely moved out and is gone. I'm not sure what to make of this.
I am in the same boat. It's, you know, as much as I love A24, there are the movies I just don't see that they release. A Ghost Story. And will this end up being one of those? Or will it be the Florida Project? I don't know. I can't tell the difference in this trailer.
As of right now, I did actually watch this trailer. Just knowing that this is the gentleman that directed It Follows, that while I don't own it or anything, I was pleasantly surprised by what he was able to accomplish with so little.
Right.
And that seems to be the motif of A24, doing a lot with a little. And Andrew Garfield was almost totally unrecognizable. I had to look up this movie and say, that was Andrew Garfield, right? Yes, it was. So... I'm interested in weird concepts like this.
Yeah, I just don't know if I'll see it or not. It really depends on if it's around at the end of the year. I made a joke that if we weren't to A Quiet Place by 20 minutes, we'd skip Fahrenheit 451. Guess what? We're at 18 minutes.
Oh!
Jason from Mexico posted a trailer for Fahrenheit 451. It's an HBO movie. I can't tell if it's a series or a movie.
TV movie.
I like the cast.
Who's in it?
Michael B. Jordan and Michael Shannon.
Yeah, Sofia Boutella, and of all people that made it into it, Cary DeLay is in this film from 2001, A Space Odyssey. Dave Bowman.
This is an iconic novel. Ray Bradbury wrote it, and of course it was made into a movie in the... 60s or 70s, and that I own that movie. That movie was pretty fantastic. I'm trying to remember if it's about book burning. It's about the idea, basically just trying to stop ideas from spreading. And It's a really incredible concept, and Bradbury was ahead of his time in that way. And it'll be interesting to see how. I mean, obviously the message is wide enough that it'll translate to this time. How relevant they make it, how they try to relate it to this time, or that'll be an interesting thing to explore.
Yeah, I kind of think the trailer didn't really. I can't really. They were burning books in it, so maybe they didn't make it that relevant. They weren't burning Kindles. I don't know. But, I mean, that'd be a good reason to bring the original to the podcast, depending on when this comes out. All right. Under 20 minutes, A Quiet Place.
A Quiet Place, yes. Directed and starring John Krasinski, along with his wife, Emily Blunt, with a screenplay by Brian Woods and Scott Beck.
Kind of John Krasinski.
And also John Krasinski. Brian Woods and Scott Beck were just in town, actually. Just did a Q&A at our local movie theater this past weekend. And this is a good movie. The idea here is that a family in a post-apocalyptic U.S., I think the Midwest probably, I'm guessing, they are trying to stay completely silent because if you make a noise, these giant monsters come out and eat you. Interesting concept. I mean, it's not unlike many other horror movies. I mean, if you're in the woods of Crystal Lake and you step on a stick, you know, Jason's going to see where you are and come running after you.
No, only if you're doing drugs or having sex. You know the rules. Or drinking alcohol.
So, I mean, sound design is part of horror. It's part of what horror movies do is sound design. So it's centering your movie essentially on the concept of sound and using a heavy amount of sound design isn't exactly a revolutionary concept. And I'm not trying to diminish this movie. It's an exceptionally well-made horror movie. The thing that I keep reacting against, and it's kind of like the Mad Max thing, is this hype of conflating this to being, oh, this is a new level of horror. This is the new thing. This is like nothing anybody's ever done before. Well, no, it's just taken well-known horror movie tropes and given them kind of a twist and done them a little bit better than they're normally done. And so I think this is a very good movie. I'm holding back on it a lot because I don't think it's because I think I'm just reacting to what everybody else is thinking. I think it's a very good movie, and I think it's well acted and it's well directed. I don't love it the way a lot of people do because I think just people are I don't know what it is that they're seeing that I'm not.
You should go.
I read nothing on people's reactions to it, so I just kind of saw it totally blind. I really liked the trailer a lot, so I wanted this to be a next level horror movie. I didn't want it to be like a step above Don't Breathe or whatever. You know, it's more in that vein, but maybe a step up. It's not.
I'm sorry, I got to tell you, that is an exceptional comparison because it's the same concept. That was a blind man hunting down children, teenagers who'd broken into his house. And again, that's about silence. It's about sound design. And it's about clever staging. And it's the same idea, just it's classic horror movie taken to a made better by solid direction.
Yeah, and so I like the movie. It's good. I like how right off the bat, they establish that everybody's at risk here, and they do it in a really effective way. I just had a hard time. You know how when I talk about this a lot, when you're totally invested in a movie and the outside world's not affecting you, I kept kind of going in and out where I'm like, God, I bet you if you really wanted to pull this movie apart, you could find out a lot of ways why these little... But you're not supposed to do that. The movie doesn't... They give you just enough to make it work. And everything that doesn't work, you'd be bringing to it. But I just kind of go. I was going in and out of being totally invested in the movie. But at the same time, it really is. It's a solid horror movie. I was kind of hoping for what I'm hoping this Hereditary movie is going to be. You know, maybe a step down from that. I was even stranger is for me. I was hoping it'd be something like. And it's just kind of a good horror movie that. I was hoping for more, so I guess I'm slightly disappointed because I had such high hopes for it.
Yeah, I'm slightly disappointed too. And I actually, in reading your review, Sean, and reading people, there was a particular article, I wish I could reference the source, talking about how this movie is kind of an essay on parenting and whatnot, and how difficult things can be, and how you just want to give them everything, but even sometimes that doesn't work. And okay, I get it, because Emily Blunt and John Krasinski are a husband and wife, and they're both the stars of the film, and Krasinski has the ability to shape this film how he wants, reflective of his own experience, perhaps. And then they just have jump scares until the film ends, and that got so annoying after a while. Effective, mind you. I mean, I did jump, and my partner is jumping all over the place. And I got a new seat almost.
I felt that the jump scares were earned. I didn't feel like they were cheap.
It has nothing to do with them not being earned. It's just after a while, even a roller coaster knows when to pull out. You know what I'm saying? Like, you can't just keep plugging away at jump scares just because you're expecting the other person will plug back. I'm mixing in a lot of metaphors here, but the idea is that it was annoyingly jarring after a while. And that means that this isn't anything new. It just means they took the things that The Conjuring, etc. are famous for recently and put them on steroids. And I felt annoyed at the end of the film. I'm not even including, at the beginning, the scene that sets up that people are in danger and you know that this movie means business, okay? Except who in their right mind is going to leave the youngest member of a party not boxed in? You know, like, you've got to flank your kids, okay? And so right off the bat, I'm thinking, stupid people. And then how do you impregnate your wife in an apocalypse, you moron? And they start out the film right in a pharmacy. There are condoms everywhere. There's birth control everywhere.
Because I wasn't sure if that was going to be considered a spoiler. Or
it's
not.
In the trailer. She's pregnant in the trailer.
Well, I was standing outside of a theater where a Quiet Place, the audience was coming out afterwards, and I heard the funniest criticism of this movie, where this guy's standing outside the theater, and he says, "But how the hell does somebody fuck that quietly?"
I'm not going to pretend I didn't think that while watching the movie.
I'm not going to pretend that I don't want to tell you how.
The people I watched it with, they came out with a theory about how this happened, because you see at some point, like, the kids are putting newspaper on the walls. And so we theorize that they've got a soundproof fuck room.
That the kids made.
Now, obviously, that was for the baby, you see, but...
And all those criticisms are fun, but they're not, you know, the movie doesn't give you enough to have them, but they, you know, it just kind of, it's common sense that the movie just kind of stays away from.
Sure.
You don't have, they don't, there's not something that you can totally say, well, wow, you know, it's, I don't know.
There's definitely something you bring to it, is wondering about how they fuck. That's definitely all. That's all in your head and not in the movie's head.
But the point that I'm trying to make is the film wants us to believe them as doing every single thing that they can to protect what they have, and they've lined up sand, you know, from the front door to all the way in town to not crinkle leaves and whatnot. But then they get pregnant. I mean, and then they don't flank their kid, the youngest one, the runt of the litter. Like, every species on Earth knows not to leave the runt of the litter at the back of the line. Come on, movie. I don't know if that was a decided choice to make them seem dumb, or if it's just, like, a missed opportunity.
It was a decided choice, so they could blame the deaf girl at the end.
I was about layering in that story about the father and the daughter,
sure,
and the possible distance between them, and the meaning behind the earpieces he was making for, that kind of thing. So it was definitely a screenwriting choice to do that. But when you talk about that type of scare, that initial scare that we get in the thing that I kept telling other people, like, yeah, no, that was really shocking and surprising and a really well-done scene, but if you want to be fucking terrified, The Witch did that far better.
Yep.
They did that far better.
Oh, yeah.
In that movie. And like I said, this isn't a new realm of horror. This isn't something we've never really seen before. It's a clever concept, but it uses just typically classically horror film stuff and just does it really, really well.
I was surprised to see Platinum Dunes as the production team on this. I actually had no idea. And I know that Krasinski and Michael Bay are, like, buddies now. I mean, they're doing everything together, and that's like the strangest pairing that I could possibly think of in my head. But I almost expected when I when the credits started and I saw the Platinum Games, like, that's surprising. I would have assumed this was like Blumhouse or something like that, based on its release date and the principles involved. The last thing that I want to say about this film is the monsters. Okay, there are monsters in here. We don't know exactly where they come from. We don't know what the story is behind them, and that's fine. I've learned to accept that because of this show. And things like It Comes at Night. You know, you don't necessarily have to know the backstory for everything to accept that it's happening. But I'm really tired of seeing monsters like this. I don't want to get too spoilery, but at the same time, you know what I'm talking about, right? This is the...
That it looks like a monster you've seen before?
Multiple times, recently too. Cloverfield is like now every monster.
Well, not to mention your one of your favorite horror franchises, that horror action movie franchise that does kind of aliens. I mean, let's just say it.
Yes, of course.
And there again, I mean, in terms of use of sound and silence, isn't this not basically taking what they did in Alien and doing it again, but in a different way, in a right. slightly different way?
A little more modern, yeah.
Of course. It's just an annoyance when it comes to monsters. Giger and Ridley Scott take the time to create something that is horrifying, yes, but beautiful. And what we get here is like, yeah, I don't care about that. I really don't care. Not even the slightest bit. And it didn't actually scare me. Annihilation. That's scary. This is not close. And I'm tired of seeing that kind of spindly, awkward-looking monster that defies the laws of physics in every way, but somehow manages to survive on this planet.
A couple other things I wanted to bring up. You mentioned It Comes at Night, and I know that you like that movie a lot. Would you say that's a better movie, or are they equal in your mind?
I would say, going into it, I had the same expectations, and It Comes at Night exceeded this one didn't, so I'd say It Comes at Night is a level above it.
The other thing is that can I please ask that film journalists stop asking people about going to the movies to see A Quiet Place and, oh my God, this guy was making noise and this person's eating popcorn and, oh my God, how are we supposed to enjoy A Quiet Place when it's not quiet? Am I right? Oh, fuck you. Fuck you. People eat popcorn at the movies all the time, people.
Do that,
people
Josh.
Have been whispering and eating popcorn and opening candy at every movie you've ever fucking been to. It doesn't make a fucking difference that this is called A Quiet Place.
You're right on that. They God. Should still stop.
Whiny bastards.
Yes.
But don't eat your popcorn.
Eat all the popcorn you
Open
want
your
in a provided container.
Open your M&Ms before the movie starts.
Thank you. Thank
I'm
you.
I'm kidding. I don't care. I open it halfway through when I'm sitting next to Josh.
Right, right.
I'm crinkling it like.
Your here. 5-year-old's got his large bag of Twizzlers that he can't figure out. Then you've got to figure it out. And then you spend the rest of the film picking it out of the bag. Take the whole thing, plop it on your lap, and then eat like 5 at a time like I do.
I'm just saying, this is not, there have been movies before that have used silence that it doesn't, again, people have been to these movies in the past. This isn't a new thing, but everybody's acting like this is some kind of, oh no, this movie right here, you have to be really quiet for. Fuck you. You have to be quiet for every fucking movie.
Yeah, I mean,
Pacific Rim, shut the fuck up. I had to go into Pacific Rim the other night and tell somebody to stop talking.
Awesome. We can use him as our tool.
I mean, I will say this is a good movie, and I feel like if I had gone in without expectations, because I really had high expectations for this one, and I'm feeling like that really is affecting my opinion of it. But it is a good, solid movie. It's just not what I was hoping for. And then back to Josh's point, where why would you leave your kid behind, the smallest one? He leaves all of them behind. He's pretty consistent to just let them run free in the scary world.
Fair point.
I don't know if I'm contradicting your point, though, other than just saying he's pretty much...
No, no, you got it. It helps take John Krasinski down a notch. He's always been like the perfect guy in everything, and now it's like, look at you, man. Look at what you did this entire movie. And shame.
Now I keep pulling strings. I'm like, well, you know, if you can kind of talk next to the river, why not just live next to the river?
There's a freaking house there that's abandoned. Just build it.
Live in the cave, man.
Yeah, and then we're going to talk about a movie later on that has a much better dad. He knows what to do with this kid. When Krasinski doesn't know what to do with his family, he got it backwards. The wrong one lived.
Oh, my God.
Anyway, we'll get there. But for now, we'll move on to our top five before we get back to the rest of our movies.
What's your top five? Who's your top five?
It is top five quiet characters in movies. Do we have anything on Instagram? I did not look.
Yeah. Steve, and I have it up right here if you're okay with me reading.
Please do.
Okay. He has Miho from Sin City as his number five. Number four, Maggie from The Simpsons. Three, the Chief from One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. Two is Driver from Drive. I have not seen that one, so I guess that probably makes sense. And is that Ryan Gosling in that one?
Which one?
Drive?
Yeah.
Okay. And number one is Silent Bob.
Good choice. Jason's from New Mexico has Jamie Tennyson, The Silence, episode 61 of The Twilight Zone. Dr. Phibbs, the abominable Dr. Phibbs, the narrator from Fight Club. You can swallow a pint of blood scene. Blaster from Mad Max Beyond Thunderdome. And number one, the Chief from One Flew the Cuckoo's Nest. Honorable mention to Hutch and Suburban Commando.
Fuck.
Cousin Jeff. Number five, Silent Bob, and he references everything I put above him. Number four, Nosferatu. Number three, whatever Marley Matlin's character was named in Children of a Lesser God. Two, Michael Myers. One, Jason Voorhees. Uncle Jeff has Beaker, the Muppets, number five. Number four, Sarah, the Twilight Zone movie. Three, Sid from Postcards from the Edge. Two, Dwayne from Little Miss Sunshine. And one, Ada from The Piano.
Ada.
Ada. I haven't seen
it. Is that Anna Paquin's character?
Yeah.
And I did mine first, so I forgot a lot of people, and I just didn't go back and change it, but I'm going to leave it. Number five, Kenny from the South Park movie. Four, Jason. Three, Michael Myers. Two, Ivan Drago from Rocky IV. And then Silent Bob from Clerks, Mallrats, Dogma, Jane, Silent Bob, Strike Back, Clerks 2, Scream 3, but not Chasing Amy, because he talks a lot. Josh?
I enjoyed the eye-rolling monkey that you added, Sean, to that one, because of Jason's didn't make the cut comment. Oh! Always got to give the credit to the puns. For me, I have number five, Dwayne from Little Miss Sunshine, played by Paul Dano before, you know, he kind of gives up on that. And four, Johnny Gray or Buster Keaton's role in The General, which we watched on this show. It's one of maybe two silent films that I've ever seen. Three is H.W. from There Will Be Blood. Two is the Chief from One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. Number one is Groot from Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah, I've got Groot number five on my list, and then the Tramp, Charlie Chaplin's legendary character, Harpo Marx, the Marx Brothers, the Chief, and Silent Bob.
I probably would have added the Chief and Groot, but too lazy.
And Marley Matlin in Children of a Lesser God is really a great performance, but she won the Oscar over Sigourney Weaver, and I'll never forgive her.
Win Oscars for action movies. Blockers.
You win Oscars for performances.
Blockers, right, yes.
Exactly. Lucky she was nominated. Anyway, continue.
Blockers stars John Cena, along with Leslie Mann and Ike Barinholtz as parents of daughters who are going out for prom night, and they stumble upon the fact that their daughters have made a sex pact for prom night, and two of them, John Cena and Leslie Mann, decide they're going to try and stop it, and Ike Barinholtz is kind of trying to stop them from trying to stop it. This is not the most clever concept. This is not particularly well executed, honestly. It's good. Kay Cannon directed this. She's been the scriptwriter for all three of the Pitch Perfect movies, and she wrote on 30 Rock. She's very, very funny, very talented. There's some growing pains when it comes to becoming a director, going from screenwriting and directing, and you can definitely see that here. She struggles a little bit in trying to corral all of this together. It's very loose, and sometimes it struggles to get to the gag. And unfortunately, the best gags are all in the trailer. All the funniest stuff is you've seen it in the trailer. Aside from maybe one gag, obviously, that they could not put in the trailer because it's so filthy. But other than that, maybe this one gag, which involves Gary Cole in a cameo along with Gina Gershon. Aside from those two cameos, the biggest jokes are in the trailer. The scene with the beer chugging in the butt that's in the trailer, and that's, you know, the car chase and all that stuff. You've seen that, and they aren't really blown up much in the movie, so there's not much there to get excited about. So I felt like I'd already seen most of Blockers by the time I was done with it, and I was kind of, or by the time I'd arrived, and then just, yeah, it just sort of happens there, and you're sitting there kind of watching a couple of jokes, and they're kind of funny. The girls are very, very talented. The girls who are the daughters, they're very talented. John Cena is really struggling being out front. This is an awkward performance as opposed to a really funny performance. He's been very good in these limited roles, like in Trainwreck and Sisters. He was very funny, playing off his very John Cena-ness. But being out front here and being the guy who's got to carry all this, he's not comfortable, and that's very obvious. And so Blockers is okay. It's still kind of funny. Those scenes that you've seen in the trailer are still quite funny because they're good ideas. Do I love this movie? No. I think it's more of a movie that you can wait to see on Netflix or streaming. I don't necessarily think you need to rush out and see this one. I can give it kind of a recommendation and say, yeah, it's good. Anybody who continues to compare it to Superbad needs to go fuck themselves. That's a genuinely funny movie. That's like a really good funny movie. This is just, it's good.
Like maybe the funniest movie of all time level funny.
Right. Yeah.
Sorry, Josh. It's true. I mean, it's just like Sigourney Weaver getting in. If you can say that, I can say this.
All right. Except that she legitimately did get an Oscar nomination.
Nomination. He said Oscar.
Should've.
But this is legit. Superbad's legit one of the funniest movies of all time. You can make that argument. Just as. But yeah, I didn't see it. I wanted to, but we went to a Cub game in Milwaukee, and on the way back, we were going to stop in Rockford and see a late showing of this movie. We got to our hotel and got to a toilet that was full of toilet paper with something on top of that toilet paper, and we were like, give us our money back, we're going home.
Yeah, wow, gross.
That'll do it.
Yeah. That is nasty.
And they gave us our money back, so it was nice. We didn't have to fight too hard. We just showed them the picture and been like, yep, sorry, here you go. So I apologize for not using your Patreon money to see the blockers, but I think I have a good excuse. Josh, what's your excuse?
Busy. Closing on a house.
Yeah. That'll happen. That'll do it, too.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'll watch it on Netflix when it finally comes out. Chappaquiddick with that.
Yeah, here. Chappaquiddick. Yes, this is the true story about Ted Kennedy and the Mary Jo Kopechne. The story that took place on the same day that that man landed on the moon. Ted Kennedy was driving a woman home from a party. He'd been up very late. He'd been drinking. He missed a turn and drove off a bridge, and the car turned over into a lake. He was able to somehow get out of the car, but she was not, and she died. She's played by Kate Mara, which why they chose her to play this, I have no idea. She's got barely any part in this movie. She's basically dead most of the movie. Bizarre casting choice, because she's far too big a star, far too great an actress to be playing this tiny role, especially when Jason Clarke isn't that great. Jason Clarke, who I loved him in the Planet of the Apes movie that he was in. But he's not been great in much after that. And he's not great here. He's not a great Ted Kennedy. He's good at regurgitating history, but trying to find, you know, the place where Ted Kennedy was at this time, this conflicted guy living in the shadow of both of his brothers, under the thumb of his father, who's pushing him to be something that he's not, which is a great leader and politician. He would become one, kind of. Almost by default, in many ways. Ted Kennedy is a very tragic figure, but at the same time, if you look at the full body of his work, especially later in his career, you know, he became, they called him the Lion of the Senate. I think that's a little bit overblown, considering his history, but this is a movie that just does not have much perspective. It's great at regurgitating things that happened. It's great. It's okay at kind of coming up with the relationship between he and his father, even if no one was there to actually know what they discussed in these moments. I don't necessarily think this is that great a movie, but it's not terrible. It's more forgettable, I guess, than anything else.
It's better than the trailer. I remember you hating this
trailer. Yeah, the trailer was really awful. This is not nearly as bad as that terrible trailer.
Are you ever going to see this, Josh? I don't think I am.
When the trailer came out, we discussed, as a person that's interested in the history of New England as it relates to the Democratic Party and liberalism, et cetera, wanting to know what somebody has to say about that via this medium is a good idea, but I have a feeling based on your review that it's not saying anything really strong.
Jack McQuiddick was definitely manslaughter, if that's it.
mean, all right.
He got a misdemeanor out of it somehow because he's Ted Kennedy. But, I mean, he did drive drunk and sleepy and killed this woman.
The Miracle Season.
Miracle Season. This is actually a movie that took place not too far from us in Iowa City back in 2011. A girl passed away in an accident. She was the leader of her volleyball team, and the team rallied the next season, that following season, in her honor, and went on to win a state championship. This is a very straightforward, typical kind of sports movie, but it was a little bit more emotional. They definitely hit the strong emotional beats. Helen Hunt is really terrific in this movie as the real-life coach of this team, and she's basically, instead of, you expect her to be this sort of typically inspiring figure, and she's not. She's a very awkward woman who didn't really know how to deal with all of these emotions. She was not a very emotional woman. She was just somebody who, she didn't like being around people, and she's very awkward around even her team. And watching her kind of build towards embracing the emotions is really the best part of this movie. And if the most, in fact, this could have been a really great movie if it was just about her dealing with all this. But it's about the whole team, and it's about all these girls, and none of the girls really are allowed to stand out. There's one girl who's made the captain, and she's also Erin Moriarty is the actress's name, and she's obviously, you know, the title character, I guess, or so above the title name, I guess, and she's all right, but she doesn't really stand apart too much, and you tend to lose her during the volleyball scenes when they're playing. Everybody's kind of featuring. Nothing really stands out there, but the movie does hit some very strong emotional beats, as it would. You know, you're dealing with the death of a young girl who was this very inspiring figure to her friends and family. So the emotional beats are there. Helen Hunt's performance is really fantastic. I would say this movie is pretty much just good enough for what it is.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is the main event for the linear, legitimate, and universally recognized, undisputed
classic.
Now it's part of the show where Josh and I get back on the same page. The undisputed classic. The Mist.
I will dispute this classic all the way.
Go ahead.
Directed by Frank Darabont. This is, of course, a Stephen King movie. Thomas Jane plays a father who he and his wife have a house on the ocean, I guess, and there's something major happens at a nearby military facility. Massive monsters get out, and he's trapped with his son inside of a grocery store, and the grocery store devolves in this sort of Lord of the Flies situation. Factions begin to develop. The monster picks off a few people here and there. Lame monsters. Lame as fuck monsters. These special effects are terrible. Terrible. They're awful. They're just god-awful. It just made me laugh. And in moments where I should not have been laughing. This movie is not, I shouldn't say it's terrible, it's just not very good. It's mostly forgettable. I don't think Darabont's direction isn't nearly as skilled as what John Krasinski does with A Quiet Place. This is just a series of things that happen.
I didn't understand a lot of the character motivations. What happened to Andre Brower? Where'd he go? Did he survive? Did he die? What is he? He's Andre Brower would have been a much better star for this movie than Thomas Jane, who's this block of wood who just has no emotions and doesn't project anything. He's not interesting. He's bland as hell. Andre Brower is constantly interesting and constantly more interesting than Thomas Jane when they're interacting, and then he's just gone. His character just disappears from the movie. And then everybody seizes upon this ending as being some, oh, it's such a brilliant ending. It's like, whatever, you know. The second I saw this ending, immediately as Thomas Jane has gone through this horrible tragedy, I just heard the Curb Your Enthusiasm theme in my head, and it just started laughing. And then I found a clip on YouTube that had combined that, and it just cemented that even further in my mind. I just don't think this is that great a movie.
Let's get him.
Go for it. You're not going to change my mind.
I don't need to change my mind. Part of me wants to do the Joe Pesci response. Everything the guy just said is bullshit.
Or the Mark Hamill response from Last Jedi. Everything you just said was wrong. It doesn't matter. I didn't see this in the theater. I think it's mainly because the trailer wasn't as well done as the film to me. And it kind of had something of an under-the-radar release, too. Once you throw Frank Darabont on there, I'm thinking, do the director Green Mile on Shawshank Redemption is another Stephen King thing? And it's a horror? Whoa, okay. Where can I see this? And then I don't really remember it being here, although it was here. Okay. What this is to me, and I've seen it a number of times now over the past decade, like about 5 or 6 times, I think, and it's in my top 5 scariest films of all time. And scary is much like comedy in that it's personal to you sometimes. And this is personal to me, and it has very little to do, believe it or not, it has very little to do with the fact that Thomas Jane has a son, okay? Honestly, that doesn't really do it for me. I just felt more in line with Thomas Jane's character. Like I was experiencing the movie through his eyes in that he seems the only one that helps out in a situation. Not saying that I'm going to be a hero in this situation, but that's what I would want to do. Being perplexed that people aren't on the same page when there's something horrific happening. To me, it's a black and white situation. Let's help each other. And he's looking at this with consternation. So I start to experience it through his eyes. How to get out, how to kill these things. It's all like I've already accepted that I could die, okay? And beyond that, my own selfish interests are now at the very bottom of the totem pole. It's how can we all do this together? And so it becomes like a microcosm of society. Every single person that you could think of in society is represented in this grocery store. Whether that's too easy, it may be, but I think he has to extrapolate on a short story to begin with, a little novella, as opposed to a full-fledged book. So he's extrapolating a little bit, but I think what he's getting at is, yeah, this can happen. It doesn't matter what the monsters are so much as we're the monsters inside of the grocery store. Marcia Gay Harden's character, yes, she's over the top, but I believe it 100%. Like, in scary situations, people flock to what makes them feel most comfortable sometimes if they're weak. And I believe that a lot of people are weak. And so, again, this is like my experience of what I thought.
We worked with a lady who probably could have been Marcia Gay Harden.
Yep.
Yeah. I'd say her name, but she might. I doubt she listens, but I wouldn't be surprised.
We all know somebody that could, in theory, be that. The person from your youth that, like, was always, no, we do not lean on the pews like that. You know, something like that. The monsters in this film, in a couple of moments, I will agree with you, the special effects are poor. More along the lines of the tentacles underneath the receiving dock, okay, towards the beginning of the film.
Looked like something out of one of those parody. Or no, like the horror movies that they make to cash in on other horror movies. That's what it looked like to me, like a sci-fi movie level bad special effect.
You can't agree with him even a little bit. You just gotta go. Just keep walking.
What I love though, I actually love the designs of the flies. The spiders in this film are absolutely terrifying. They have human skeletons on them. Like, what happened? Where have these come from? They've come from another dimension. Okay. So you have to think of, like, if spiders in dimension X came through, what would they look like? Well, it would be different, but it would still be kind of along the same lines because there are so many ways of doing things. I love these monsters, especially the one towards the end. Say what you want about the end, and I can't wait to get to yours because you're going to say it way better than I am. But that end scene, and I debated this for about a half hour with somebody who was watching it for the first time this week. When they see a monster cross the highway and they're coming towards the end of their journey and they've gotten out and they say, as long as the mist will go, we'll try and outrun it. As long as the car will go. You see that thing and it's like that little ounce of we got away. It just comes crashing down. It's like... I praise Spielberg's War of the Worlds because I really believed that bad, terrible things were happening. And I finally got that sense of doom, that sense of this is it. It's even your best effort still doesn't do it. This is the apocalypse. This is the end of the world. That ginormous creature, that tentacled creature crossing, that was just so neat. The first time I saw it, I mean, I got tingles up and down my spine. And what they choose to do, though, may be too quick if you stop and think about it. But in a way, you don't want the child to really experience that horror in any way, shape, or form. The horror of his father killing him, the horror of a monster killing him. So he doesn't have much of a choice, and it seems clear that all of the characters are on the same page. So therefore, I'm on the same page, too. I've never thought for a moment that it was a cheap shot. At the end, I always thought, like, you know what, though? This is in line with the rest of the film. Like, it's just one thing after another. It doesn't let up. And I like that about this film so much.
Well, I mean, just staying there, a lot of movies, especially then, didn't have the balls that go that way.
Sure.
You know, and I don't know. It just really, I was invested. It was sort of like Blair Witch Project for me. And I feel like if you were to watch Blair Witch Project kind of, you know, without getting invested, whether you're doing it intentionally or not, it's just people in the woods with video cameras and it's a mess. I could see watching this and not being invested in why people wouldn't like it, but it pulled me in better than what A Quiet Place did. And just, I don't know, it just, I became invested in all the characters. I wasn't watching it with, you know, joking around with it and laughing at this and that. I didn't matter that the CGI wasn't perfect or that a TV crew filmed it and not an actual cinematographer and whatever. None of that mattered because the story caught me, grabbed me enough to keep me in the movie, and therefore I wasn't, you know, I'm not hearing the Curb Your Enthusiasm. Sure, it's funny. I watched the video. It made me laugh, but it even watched the movie afterwards, that didn't pop back in my head. It didn't ruin it for me.
Yeah, experiencing it for the sixth time this past week was not a problem. In fact, if nothing else, watching somebody else experience it for the first time was kind of enriching. It just made me, it confirmed to me that it's a unique ending. I disagree. You don't have to like it, of course, but the one thing that I strongly disagree with is something that it's ultimately forgettable and doesn't stay with you. I think that it's very memorable. Otherwise, that Curb Your Enthusiasm thing doesn't work. You remember this one more than most endings to films because it is so unique and has the balls to at least do that, even if you don't like it.
I saw this movie in theaters and completely forgot that I'd seen it. I just completely forgot that I'd seen it. And that's so...
Most people, I think, wouldn't find it forgettable.
I saw
this and wrote about it and talked about it on the radio and then forgot that I'd seen it. I think that part of that, though, is this. I've seen so many movies, and even more than you guys have seen. I see so many more movies than most people see. And so I think that this movie, the sameness of it to me, for other, you know, I can compare all those monsters. I can compare to other better monsters, especially even that one at the end. There's a movie called Monsters that has a better version of that monster in it.
I disagree, but I like what you're saying. We're getting there. We're finding common ground.
Like I say, I'm saying that I've seen a better version of that monster. I've seen a better version than each of these monsters in other better movies, and I've seen. But most of all, what I've seen, though, is better direction of these similar types of characters. I've seen them better directed in other movies. And that, to me, this movie just is an amalgamation of things that are, they're okay, kind of, but they're not nearly as good as this, or they're not nearly as good as that. And the production design isn't that great. And the lead actor is definitely not that great. He's not a great actor, Thomas Jane. And I don't connect with him in any way as an actor. He's bland. He's dull. And that moment that's supposed to hit at the end when he's looking at his wife doesn't hit because he's not good.
Oh, I think the ending hits, and I think the ending lifts everything he just said up, you know, and it's such a memorable ending, and that's one thing you can't say to a lot of movies like that, because a lot of movies don't end like that, and I can't really think of one beyond, and that's what kind of moves this movie to another level. Quiet Place is definitely better directed, but this has a better ending than it does.
Yeah, and the stakes just seem higher here than most things. I really dig the idea of the apocalypse movie because of the analysis of what would we do if in theory we felt the world was ending. It's something that once you fathom in your head as a young kid, you get these really odd things of, wait, things end? And then, wait, the world could end? That's such a massive concept, and for a film to reach that massive concept for me in a reproduction, it's a great thing to see in this medium.
I think like, to take it to another personal place for me, I do find the portrayals, especially when it comes to post-apocalyptic movies, the portrayals of the masses tend to be extraordinarily cynical. And this is another version of that. The Road is another movie I reacted against because it's such a cynical notion of what we would be if things went bad. I don't think necessarily, and I know this may be some kind of Pollyanna thing, I don't think it would be nearly as bad as people think. I think you have to dislike people a lot to say that it's going to turn out everybody's going to turn on themselves and they're going to get their guns and start shooting anybody that they see.
They do that now. Yeah. But I mean, we're in times where we have an excess of every single little thing and we still hate everything. If everything was taken away from people, I think you better believe that they would be awful. I'm not cynical. I'm trying to be realistic.
I'm the least cynical person
I know. And I'm saying
look at the aftermath of a fire right now. What happens in the aftermath of a fire? Hundreds of people rush to save people and then give them money to rebuild their life. And I mean, that happens more often than not in those situations, and that is just, that's people coming together after what is a personal apocalypse and helping people, and that's the way I see the world. And so when I see movies like this that are constantly just dour and downbeat and thinking that the world just sucks and people will suck in this situation, and that's just a personal thing, it's not this movie, that's got very little to do with what this movie is. I just don't react well with stuff like that because I don't hate, as much as I might be a cynic in many ways, I don't hate humanity that much yet. I think it's amazing that we get up every day and are able to go places very safely. I mean, something could happen, but like, people aren't just driving on their own side of the road because they feel like it. It's amazing that we have this the level of safety that we have in this country, even as there are other horrible things that are happening. Most of us get up every day and do whatever the hell we want and come home at the end of the night and we're just fine.
Yeah, but I mean, that's normal. I don't know. I mean, we could debate that till the cows come home. Is that this thing?
Indeed.
I mean, if you, like Mark Maron had in his last comedy special, he says, you know, you look at just Trump alone, all these people came out of their hate holes to go and vote for him. And, you know, he said another line he had in the comedy, goes, I never thought I'd say this, these Nazis are annoying. You know, I mean, now cut out, you know, now you're making the population even smaller and you're throwing monsters in the mix. To me, the right move is, and I think Sean's actually said this before, why would you want to live in this, you know? And that's where they go with this. You know, in a Quiet Place, they're procreating. They're having kids, you know? Why would you want to do that? And then not to spoil the ending, but the move he makes is, granted, they're going to, could make part two of a cool action movie, I guess.
Miss Two, Crucify the...
No. A Quiet Place.
Oh,
okay. That'd be a cooler ending. A sequel where it's not horror anymore. It's just her blowing up whatever those things are, aliens. But I don't know. I kind of lost where I'm going with it.
No, I like what you're saying.
When you're talking about A Quiet Place, though, that is a post-apocalyptic movie that I can get behind more because there is a hopefulness there. You see a scene where John Krasinski is on top of the silo and he's sending out a signal fire, and there are other signal fires around to other people who are still alive and still trying to keep things going. And that, to me at least, is there's a hopefulness, and that's what makes it more powerful, when there is hope.
What's amazing,
what makes a lack of hope so much more interesting, is when there is hope.
What I love about what you just said there is that a symbology of lighting the fire to keep it going is literally what they said in The Road, which is the best part of that movie, to keep the fire going.
But it's negated by every other piece of that movie's attitude.
I think that movie is so hopeful, and that is the reason why it's hopeful, and you're pointing out a good point of A Quiet Place. Sometimes, though, I'm so naive most of the time. You guys have been witness to this. And this one makes me think, you know what? Sometimes shit is just like this. And this movie is realist to me. It's not cynical. It's realist, which that is a totally different thing. In fact, it is so unselfish of him to kill his own child and not take his own life. He has to live with that pain and the monsters and die a horrible death, and he still says, "Yeah, this is what I'm going to do because it is the best thing to do." That is keeping the fire lit right there, man. Like, that is humanity right there. I'm going to do every single thing that I can for my son. That is hardcore versus John Krasinski leaving his kid at the back of the line. I mean, so in a way, this was a good pairing of films, and we can talk about the juxtaposition of what is perceived as hopeful and not, and reality versus cynical. This medium is proving to be I keep saying the word medium, but this show is doing a great job of illustrating that to me this week.
But again, I think this movie appeals to your ideas, but not necessarily as a movie, because as a movie, it's low rent, it's not particularly well acted, and not particularly well directed. But it appeals to your ideas, both of yours. Ideas that you have about it.
But I guess the Blair Witch Project would be the perfect example of that's
Blair Witch is a daring experiment in form on top of being a good horror movie.
But it's not well directed, as acting's not really
very good. I disagree with that completely. I think it's exceptionally well acted, given for what it is, and using the cameras the way they did, and as they'd hardly been used before. That movie is a daring experiment in form, whereas this is a TV movie.
That may be the case, especially when you look at the titles. Looking at the titles makes you think that you're watching something a little low rent, because
The Shield, I believe the people who were filming The Shield filmed this movie.
Yeah. Okay.
Really quick.
And it's lasted how long now? People know The Mist. They remember it. It was popular enough that Universal released a Blu-ray that has both the color and the black and white versions. And that costs money. Like, films that aren't successful, they're never going to have a special feature on there, and they're not going to give you two versions of the film to buy.
I was throwing this out, though, amongst a bunch of geeks, and they had no idea what this movie was. The movie theater guys that I hang out with, the theater managers, these are some hardcore nerds.
Sure.
And they had no idea what The Mist was.
I find myself to be a hardcore nerd. Maybe not that hard. I would like to enter that next level.
Last episode, maybe you didn't say it on the podcast or not, but were these the same hardcore nerds who didn't know who Saoirse Ronan was?
Oh.
Checkmate. All right.
Saoirse Ronan, serious dramatic actress. This is horror movie genre geek stuff.
Yeah.
She's never been in a Marvel movie. That's why they don't know who she is.
Coming soon.
Or she will be.
number 18 in 1988. Squeezed and pulled and hurt my neck in 1988.
Squeezed and pulled and hurt your neck in 1988.
1988.
That was a lot more fun than I thought it would be. Okay, 1988, there's three films. One of them I've seen before in the theater. One of them I was about to watch, but could not get my version to work. No matter what, internet problems. And the other one I couldn't find anywhere, which was really disappointing, because it was produced by Gale Ann Hurd of Terminator and Aliens and things of that nature. I'll start with that one, and that's called Bad Dreams. The concept of this film is that a girl that survived a cult experience where everyone committed mass suicide starts having dreams that particular leader is going to come back and get her. People around her are killing themselves, and she feels that it's related. Now, I'll say this because we watched, I don't know if you guys actually got to Near Dark last year with Bill Paxton and Lance Henriksen and directed by Kathryn Bigelow. And I was so impressed with that movie as a low budget, but very serious and very gory film that I saw this as like 1988's version of that perhaps. And unfortunately, it's just nowhere. Like, you can't rent it on Amazon. It's not on Netflix, not on Hulu. It's not on YouTube. Every single place. And I'm desperate to see Bad Dreams. And I feel like somebody like Jason would have this as part of a four-pack of films somewhere. So let us know, Jason.
I saw this movie years ago. It's been a very long time. And I was so frustrated that I couldn't find it again. Because I had nightmares as a child about Richard Lynch and that burn makeup that he said in the trailer.
Well, Richard Lynch is scary enough on his own. I mean, good Lord.
So that I really, really wanted to see this again. But of course, no, this is the same director. Weirdly enough, this guy goes on to direct The Craft, Easy A, and Friends with Benefits with Justin Timberlake and Mila Kunis. Like, what a weird career. Andrew Fleming is the director here. I really wanted to see this, but no.
I can't possibly.
I seriously doubt it would stand up to the childhood nightmares that it gave me.
No, probably not. But that's kind of weird how it reignites certain thoughts that you've had lying dormant, like Invaders from Mars did for me. Also, it is from 1988 again, starring George Burns and Charlie Schlatter, I think is his name.
Sorry, I can't withhold the groan every time I hear about this movie. It's so horrible.
I'm with you. Vice Versa, or Like shit. Father, Like Son, but with grandpa and grandson. And George Burns switches the body with his grandson, so he's 18 again. And you have Charlie Schlatter, who's an exceedingly annoying actor. I've seen him in various places.
Why does anyone ever think that Charlie Schlatter was a movie star? What was this bizarre thing that people thought, let's put Charlie Schlatter in this?
Maybe he did a really good George Burns impression at one point, and then the genesis of that finally realized itself this week on screen.
At one point, people thought he could be TV version of Ferris Bueller, and no, God no, that was awful.
Oh, that's right, terrible. He is Ferris Bueller.
Oh,
wow. Oh, but that movie, I don't remember it besides seeing it in the theater and thinking, didn't we just see this?
I didn't bother to watch it again because I saw it multiple times when I was young because somebody in my family wanted to watch it multiple times, and I fucking hate that movie.
Thirdly, and not lastly, well, it is lastly. Shut up, Josh. Okay.
The best one of the week.
Above the Law. I tried to watch this, and my copy wouldn't work due to internet.
I kept trying to watch this, but I kept looking up Marked for Death. Because they're the same fucking movie.
I'm sure that they are. It's directed, though, by Andrew Davis. And the only thing that I'll say about that is Andrew Davis has got a movie in my top 50 in The Fugitive. And that's such a well-executed film. I was listening to a radio show today, and they talked about that being one of their top five most rewatchable films. Depending on your preferences, I can't disagree with that because it's so well done as a thriller in a Carpenter-type film. But Andrew Davis also did Under Siege with Steven Seagal, and Seagal produced and stars in this one. I see that Sharon Stone is in the film, a number of others, but
Under Siege is better.
I don't doubt the veracity of that statement.
That
but
doesn't mean much, but it's better.
And I don't even know what to say about it other than I was intrigued by the thought of where Steven Seagal and Andrew Davis started their careers.
There was this bizarre thing that happened in the late 80s, even into the early 90s, where conservatives in Hollywood wanted to go back to Vietnam and try and refight the war. So Rambo goes back and Chuck Norris goes back, and Steven Seagal in this movie is going back to Vietnam because we're going to go fight that war again. And somehow we're going to win it via Hollywood. We're going to win the Vietnam War. And this is this weird, bizarre right-wing revisionism that the heart of this bizarre small cult of movies. And they're all bad, too. That's the thing. They're all bad on top of it.
Rambo's not bad. He did Rambo 2.
Rambo 2 sucks balls.
No, Rambo 2 is awesome.
Everything
Rambo
after Rambo awesome. Blows.
Rambo 2 was a ton
Rambo's
of
Rambo's a solid movie. Everything after is a piece of shit.
Rambo 2 is a great action movie.
I was curious to know, though, about Above the Law, was it going to be Rambo 2 fun, or was it going to be like just flat-out Van Damme bad?
It's a step below Van Damme.
It's just a group of people who just, with too much testosterone, who wished that we'd won Vietnam and thought they could still go back and get it.
Where does Steven Seagal fit into that? Is he old enough to actually have been a part of Vietnam had he had the chance?
It was just this, it was more just that era of producers and directors that would just pick anybody who they thought was, you know, a fighter, and anybody who agreed with them philosophically, which Steven Seagal definitely did. They wanted to go back and win Vietnam.
That's it from 88 this week. Doesn't it get exciting for a little while? I guess Colors is coming up this week, which would be interesting, but no big blockbusters like Beetlejuice for a while.
All right. Next week, we've got... what is next
Rampage.
Week? Rampage. Truth or Dare.
Yes!
Truth or Dare, Sergeant Stubby?
Sergeant Stubby is an animated movie about a dog in World War I or II.
Borg versus McEnroe?
Shia LaBeouf playing John McEnroe.
The Isle of Dogs expanding to 1,700 theaters. I doubt we get it, but who knows? Yeah, so because of it's such a strong week, our classic is going to be Friday the 13th, because technically April 13th is Friday. We will record on Sunday or Monday, so it'll be like the 15th, 16th. You'll hear it the 16th or 17th, maybe even later than that.
It's still funny.
Oh, it's more funny that way. And then our top five is top five Friday the 13th movies. Right? There's 12 of them.
Yeah.
Why is there only 12? I don't know, but...
Why is there only 12?
It's Friday the 13th. There should be at least 13. If you're going to go past 2, you should go to 13. And if you're going to send them into space, I don't know.
I only watched 7 of those. I think I got the full gist of it.
If you should watch Freddy vs. Jason.
I did not.
You would enjoy it. That one actually knew what it was and did a good job.
If you want to have a good time right now on YouTube, check out the Cinema Snob, Brad Jones. He's got a review of Jason X that's quite hilarious.
But yeah, otherwise, that's pretty much our show. I want to thank our Patreon supporters. Let's start with our Key Grip level and Charlie Messing. And then another. Our character actors, Josh and Christina.
I think this is the beginning of a beautiful friendship.
Our special effect level, Corey.
May the force be with you.
Our associate producer, Jason from New Mexico.
Everybody has to eat shaving cream once in a while.
And our movie stars, Dave Seavers and Uncle Jeff.
I want the truth! You can't handle the truth!
If you want to be a Patreon supporter, ihatecritics.net/Patreon. Get yourself a credit on the show, merch, help us grow the show. And then go to iTunes, subscribe to the show, write and review the show. We will read your review on the air, and hopefully it'll move us up the charts. Stick around after the credits. We may or may not play Flick Chart.
That ought to do it. Thanks very much, Ray.
And we're the three best friends that anybody could have. We're the three best friends that anyone could have. We're the three best friends that anyone can have. And we'll never, ever, 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 ever leave each other. We're the best three friends that anybody could have. I mean the three best friends that anybody could have. That's right, the three best friends that anyone...
There Will Be Blood or Coming to America?
There Will Be Blood.
I still haven't seen Coming to America. I'm waiting till it turns 30 later this year, but I bet you it will be There Will Be Blood.
Yeah, it's a Coming to America, but you're probably right. I'll just pick it.
I know the Soul Glow commercial, though. That I'm familiar with.
X-Men 2000 or Austin Powers and Goldmember?
Ugh, that is a brutal choice. Austin Powers.
Yeah, it's Austin Powers. I can't get over being introduced to everyone by X-Men's Patrick Stewart. Movie. Yeah. Also known as Sabretooth.
This is the introduction to X-Men 2.
Yeah.
But I'd probably take X-Men because you needed that to get to X-Men 2. So, but you're right. I'd rather watch anything else. Starship Troopers 97 or Kung Fu Panda?
Let's see. If it were the Riff Trax version of Starship Troopers, there's no doubt I would pick that. So I'll go with the other one.
I hate Starship Troopers with a strong passion. So, Kung Fu Panda.
Glad to hear that. I will take Kung Fu Panda as well. Remember all the Star Wars geeks in high school? Loved Starship Troopers.
It opened like within a week of Alien Resurrection 2 in 1997. So, you know that I was mad that another Alien movie tried to infringe on my Alien movie.
Ah, I get it now.
Well, it also sucks. I mean, Casper Van Dien is in it, for crying out loud.
Home Alone or The Wrestler?
No, The Wrestler.
Right. Home Alone. I haven't seen The Wrestler, so.
I will take The Wrestler. You will like that when you do see it, though, I think. Dr. No, 1962, which I have not seen, or Rain Man.
If you haven't seen it, do you want to go to another one? Or
I kind of want to make you choose Bond over Rain Man.
Yeah.
I totally will. It's not a question.
Wow. All right. I would be Rain Man. So
we will reset. Robin Hood Men in Tights or Wally?
Wally.
I agree. The Flintstones or The Dark Knight Rises?
Dark Knight Rises, please.
I'll take The Dark Knight Rises, but if you had said Viva Rock Vegas, I may have changed my mind.
And I would have gone with you, but I'll say Dark Knight Rises. I don't think I've seen this one. The Science of Sleep and Dr. Dolittle, 1998.
I'll just skip Science of Sleep.
Sounds like a documentary.
American Pie or Dr. Dolittle?
American Pie.
Yep. Hostel, 2005. Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
Ferris Bueller. I would take the Ferris Bueller TV show over Hostel.
Ooh. Ooh.
And have you seen Raging Bull?
Yes.
Oh. Shakespeare in Love or Raging Bull?
Boy, that should be good. That's a tough one.
You're the deciding factor.
I'm Raging Bull. He's Shakespeare in Love. I like Shakespeare in Love. I'm not.
I mean, I'm going to watch Shakespeare in Love again. Raging Bull, I'll probably watch again. Watchability factor goes to Shakespeare in Love.
That's the only thing you're judging it on is watchability?
Because they're two extraordinarily quality films, yeah.
Sweet Home Alabama or Cinderella 1950?
Cinderella. A pile of flaming garbage over Sweet Home Alabama.
This is great. I really hate Sweet Home Alabama.
I hate that movie so much.
I hate the song, too. The Nightmare Before Christmas or Trainspotting?
Nightmare Before Christmas.
Walk to Remember or Gandhi? I don't know why that makes me laugh.
Gandhi is extraordinarily long and occasionally boring, but it is a better movie, obviously.
Thor or The Skin I Live In?
I'm not sure about that.
That's the Javier Bardem, I think, Almodovar movie. No, it's Antonio Banderas. I'm sorry.
I definitely haven't seen that.
Skip that one.
All right. Thor or The Ring?
Thor.
I will go with The Ring. Notting Hill or Million Dollar Baby?
Million Dollar Baby.
Notting Hill.
Million Dollar Baby. Ghostbusters 2 or X-Men?
God damn it.
Watchability factor, Ghostbusters 2.
I guess I'll go.
They're both so bad, but I'll go.
I hope my sister's not listening. She loves Ghostbusters 2, and she hates that I don't like it. Ghostbusters 2.
I think Ghostbusters 2 is fine. It's just like so. It's such a canyon between the first and the second films.
Yeah, I like. I just know everybody hates it. I don't know why they hate it, but I like it.
I quote that one a ton, especially Janosch and the man eating toaster trick. You know, and, yeah.
Although I always to expect my kids. You're short. You're
probably yeah. Yes, I've said that to Ben so many times. Oh.
A Few Good Men. Or A Shot in the Dark, 1964. Peter Sellers, I have not seen it.
Yeah, I've done Panther. Honestly, I've not seen that one either.
A Few Good Men and Thor.
A Few Good Men.
Thor.
A Few Good Men. Not a Thor fan.
I like Thor, but I like A Few Good Men a lot more than that.
Click? Or Amadeus?
Good one, Flick Chart.
Amadeus, obviously.
Agreed.
Attack of the Clones or Children of Men?
This is exciting. I need to keep Children of Men in the back of my head, too.
I don't think Attack of the Clones is that bad.
It's the worst Star Wars film ever made.
It's not that bad. I'll take it.
Children of Men.
Children of Men.
In a pile of garbage, flaming garbage, over Star Wars.
Alien Resurrection. Or Starship. No, I'm just kidding. Brokeback Mountain.
Which one? Sorry. It's
Alien Resurrection versus Brokeback Mountain.
Brokeback Mountain, obviously. Yeah.
Agreed.
Yeah. Million Dollar Baby or Man on Fire, 2004.
Million Dollar Baby.
Million Dollar Baby.
Oh, that was easy. Starship Troopers or Minority Report?
Minority Report.
Minority Report. Whew. Oh, that was the battle of Robert Heinlein versus Philip K. Dick.
let's see here. Let's look for something fun. Come on. I got Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind and Clerks 2.
Eternal Sunshine.
Eternal Sunshine.
Lethal Weapon or The Others?
I like Lethal Weapon. I think The Others is a more artful movie. I'd probably watch Lethal Weapon before I'd watch The Others. Lethal Weapon, I guess.
So,
Lethal Weapon. I've got a diminishing opinion of Lethal Weapon. I don't know why.
Mel Gibson?
Maybe. That's probably it, yeah.
Gary Busey?
He had an accident.
His is explained by brain injury. Mel Gibson's just a shitty person.
Some of Gary Busey is explained by substance abuse.
Well, yeah. Mel Gibson, he's got to explain that away with religion, I think.
Both brain injuries.
Somehow I managed to be a billionaire. The Curious Case of Benjamin Button and Field of Dreams.
Field of Dreams.
Field of Dreams. Fincher's least film.
Top Gun or The Mask? No, it's not Aliens 3.
First of all, Aliens 3 doesn't exist. It's Alien 3.
Alien 3, whatever. It's not even a...
No, it's so much better than Benjamin Button. Like, you have to endure Benjamin Button. Alien 3 is like, this sucks, but man, look at this.
Benjamin Button has some pretty great performances.
It's just
Cate Blanchett
movie I don't
want
to watch.
I just so bored and so looking forward to it, you know? It's such a good trailer and everything. Oh, yeah.
Top Gun or The Mask? 94 Mask with Jim Carrey.
The Mask.
Top Gun.
Wow. I guess this movie, Top Gun. I go with The Mask for Charlize Theron's shoulder.
What?
Cameron Diaz?
Cameron Diaz. I meant to say Cameron Diaz, and the wrong name popped out of my mouth.
No. Okay, Charlize Theron's shoulder is no slouch.
No. I was overplanned on that one. X-Men 2 or Citizen Kane?
Okay. Yep.
All right, last one. Iron Man or Clerks 2?
Boy, I really like Iron Man, but I really love Clerks 2.
I really love Clerks 2 as well. But
Clerks 2.
It's Iron Man for me.
It's Clerks 2 for me. Just more personal.
Yeah, same. That's what I'm going with, yeah.
All right, we're done.